We take a single episode of a science fiction TV series and overanalyze it to within an inch of its life. This is the Fusion Patrol Podcast. Welcome to the discussion. Hello and welcome to another episode of Fusion Patrol. I'm Eugene.
And I'm Ben.
And tonight we are talking about Blake 7, The Keeper by Alan Pryor. Blake and the Liberator crew have come to a planet whose name I didn't bother to write down from the information provided to them by Dockerley about the location of the location of Star One. The location of the location of Star One.
That's that would be accurate, yes.
That's correct. Which is apparently around the neck of a royal personage on said unnamed planet. So he goes down, and most of his crew's captured, but he isn't captured, but just barely escapes. And then we find out that Travis and Servalan are also there trying to find the location of Star One, and Travis seems to be acting very strangely, like, think of the power we could have. Think of the power we could have. Whereas Servalan seems almost wisely to realize that there's a darn good reason why nobody should have this information about the location of Star One. But then Travis betrays her and leaves, apparently with the location of Star One, and eventually Blake gets it too. This is a filler episode if ever I saw
one. Oh man, are you joking me? I mean, the word that ran through my head was diversion, distraction. And this is a diversion. I mean, it's a filler. It's a nothing.
So the reason I just totally missed out on the filler part of this episode is that it takes place in a sort of feudal, primitive society. They live in tents, they're warriors, and there's lots of blustering and soothsaying. And
we should say that the blustering, 99% of it, comes from the pirate captain.
Captain from Pirate Planet.
Yeah.
Pirate Planet? Yeah.
Yeah.
From Doctor Who. He's quite obviously, that's who that is. And there's a little intrigue there. There's the brother who's on the outs, who's coming to reclaim his throne. And then there's the blithering brother who's on the throne. And Soothsayer sister. And it turns out dad's in the prison. And then there's the fool. And the fool is jealous of Villa, who's also a fool. And so there's a sort of a fool's duel going on there with a little Machiavellian fooling.
And Jenna is busy playing the current leader, whatever the title he has, playing him for a fool.
Yeah, Shaw.
Shaw, yeah. Yes.
I thought, I'll go so far as to say I think Jenna was having fun, or Sally Navette was having fun with this.
I agree.
Episode that she actually got some lines and she got to do stuff. And even though she was sort of playing a sort of vapid, you're so wonderful kind of role, you know, behind her eyes, she was obviously still playing the tough seasoned space pirate.
Which says a lot for her acting ability, because it would have been so easy for any actress to just play dumb and then, but try to communicate through some kind of verbal communication that, this is really just an act, but to be able to
so
put on a layered portrayal like she did to make us realize that this was really an act while playing him for the fool, there were certain acting subtleties that she drew upon. I was very much entertained by her most of all.
We finally reached a turning point here where we're going to get some good characterization out of Jenna. As the show has been predominantly the Ave and Blake Villa show, and some of the other characters have gotten slighted, like Gant, who is no longer being slighted, I have to say. His lines are being competently read by Zen or whoever.
Orak.
Villa Shoe.
Yeah, really.
Whatever the case may be. Anyway, so yeah, there's just not a whole lot of going on in this. It's really kind of the court intrigue. And then it's there's a little bit of filler within the filler, where we have Avon, who's up on the ship with Callie, spot what he believes to be Travis's ship and leaves position to destroy it, to get rid of Travis, which causes Blake and the others to get captured. Then Blake escapes. But it really doesn't lead anywhere because Travis wasn't on board the ship.
It was meaningless.
But it dragged the story out a little bit longer.
Yep.
And then it also gave the position where when Travis is leaving later on and Aven wants to go blow him up, rightly, this time Callie won't let him.
Actually, don't they think it's Servalen? Because it's Servalen's ship.
Yeah, he does think it's Servalen's ship. That's right. He thinks it's Servalen. It is, in fact, Travis stealing Servalen's ship. But either way, if he had blown the ship up, it would have destroyed the fact that Travis is leaving the planet with the information concerning the location of Star One, which is the dangerous information that cannot be allowed to fall in anybody's hands except Blake, who's going to use it to blow it up, which we can revisit that notion here in a little bit. I got nothing. I mean, it's so filler.
I have nothing. I got absolutely nothing except for just little trivial things that happen along in the story.
Well, we've only recorded Bill
is very
six
good
minutes,
at sleight of hand work, which doesn't surprise me, given that he's a thief. But he does some good little magician's work there. Don't trust anybody because everybody on that planet is duplicitous.
Oh yeah, yeah. Everybody's out for themselves on that one.
Yeah, it's there were surprises. I will admit, it took turns that I did not expect. For the blustering Shaul to actually kill his brother. I didn't see that one coming.
No.
I actually thought that the brother, since he's coming back to reclaim his position, his power, his throne, whatever, that he'd be the one to kill
the other.
You know, the blustering brother. Because I have no other name for him.
Yeah, it's like Goloth and Rug or something like that.
So it was
And Soothsister.
And even she is giving prophecy by looking into the vapors.
The vapors.
That Goloth is going to die. And yeah, he does, but for not the reasons we all expect. I mean, it was just a lot of misdirection for the sake of stretching the story out. That's it.
It's kind of interesting that because I am desperately trying to stretch this out. This could literally be the shortest podcast we've ever done. We've said that before, but
yeah, it could be.
We're stretching it here, but it's an interesting kind of notion, prophecy. So we've had Orax prophecies in the past in Blake 7, and there are many many shows that do prophecy, and usually prophecy is accurate in a show that portrays a universe where prophecy is real. Prophecy is accurate, but you don't understand it
until
it's too late.
After the fact, and then you kind of retcon all the details to fit into the prophecies. They had it figured out all along. No, not really. They just gave you something very ambiguous and then tricked you.
Well, yes, but I mean, I think in some of the stories, we could look at the Tale of Oedipus. You know, the oracle gives you all the information you need, but it's completely inactionable. Everything that the king tried to do to prevent from being killed by the one sandaled man or whatever it was just leads to it actually happening in the end. But you really couldn't see it coming. The information that you're given doesn't help you until after it's happened and then it's done. And then you go, oh yeah, all the pieces fit. That's a conceit in storytelling. In real life, of course, people make predictions and then retcon it and try to say, well, that's what I meant all along. But I'm talking about in a universe where we're pretending like prophecy is a real thing. Because this woman obviously has it. She sees Villa and Jenna come. And she gives a very unambiguous prophecy. I see a beautiful woman and a fool arriving here in our tents.
And she nailed it.
So this stuff with the vapors and this stuff, it's real in this universe. She is capable of divining the future. Now, here's the interesting twist that I like about this story. Usually, in a story where someone has the gift of prophecy, they don't lie. They tell you the prophecy. I mean, I have the gift of prophecy. This is what I see. Here it is. In this story, she obviously sees it, and she lies
to
get her own ends, which I love that. I love that idea.
Well, I won't go so far as to say that she just blatantly lies, but if I remember, because I watched it last night, if I recall correctly, she only tells him just what she wants him to hear.
Kind of. I mean, she says there's going to be a blood feud and you'll be killed.
She doesn't say that the brother will kill him. She sort of makes it sound like she leads him to believe that the brother will kill him in their fight.
And then, and how does my brother die? And she says, well, I can't see that. And so
she's being very cagey in what she volunteers. And then she, mm-hmm. Oh, mm-hmm. Yeah, it's very slick.
It's very slick. And it's very manipulative. And it brings up an incredible thing that if you had the power of prophecy, think if you saw what was going to happen and it happened, let's say.
Just as you saw it?
Hence the power of prophecy. Right. I see a fool and a blonde woman arriving at the cabins. Bing. Here they go. Fool and blonde woman. You have that prophecy. Would you, in fact, see a prophecy of you telling a fib to get the prophecy to happen the way that you saw it happening? So, in other words, did she see herself?
Wow.
Did she see herself poisoning her brother in the prophecy and then give him a false one? or can she now change her own prophecy because she's part of it?
You know, we are dangerously treading into Paul Atreides territory.
he is the Kwisatzhak.
Well, but this is sort of the madness that starts to possess him in the Follow of Dune books, especially when he reaches a point where, because he can constantly see into the future, he ends up plucking his own eyes out.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because and it tends to drive him mad.
Well, I would say that Sooth's sister was crazy.
She was creepy. She was nuts.
She was crazy there at the end. I mean,
yeah,
she's like,
she was. Oh, she was nuts. There was no question about it.
Yeah.
So, wow. Did she actually see herself? Man, that's a really great question. One that I don't think we'll ever have answered.
No.
I mean, clearly.
No.
In fact, I dare say if any one of us had the opportunity to actually, crawl into the screen and ask her directly, did you see yourself lie or misdirect, mishandle the truth a little bit in order to deceive your brother? Did you see yourself do that as you revealed the prophecy? You know, you wouldn't get a straight answer out of her anyway.
Yeah,
who
usually
knows what she saw?
Usually a soothsayer is not directly involved. I mean, that's one
They're
of
usually
those
the impartial observer.
Yeah, they usually have to, you go consult them and they give you some answers and then off you go on your way. And then, look, she was right after all.
They usually see things in third person.
So it's kind of interesting that she was right in the thick of things. It makes for a different dynamic, which that in itself was kind of mildly interesting.
Yeah. I mean, if you want to take this story out of the context of the entire series so far and make it a complete standalone, sure. I think I would give it more credibility. Well, not credibility, but I'd give it more weight in terms of storyline. But given that this is still the episode that's supposed to take us yet one step further to Star One,
yeah,
it became yet more diversion.
Oh, and also I'm going to point out that her soothsaying is obviously drug-induced. So, I mean, this is if we're talking about. So there's an agency here that's not just, ooh, people have psychic powers. There is a thing. So, I mean, it's not taking us entirely away from the Blake 7 universe, which has been relatively factual. I think that's probably a wrong word. But in other words, there's not a lot of wizards and stuff in Blake 7.
No, it's been mostly based on science.
This is the first instance, and they have tried to put it on something like, well, this is one of the properties of this drug, kind of like the spice, I guess we could say. And
yeah, you could equate it to spice and how it opens up the consciousness a little bit, but then you still end up in the realm of the mystique, the mysterious, the mystical. So it still kind of veers away from hard, cold science. I mean, or even the prophecies that that ORAC came up with
are science based.
Totally science based.
Computer modeling, right? They're computer modeling. So
this is the first time we've really gone into the area of the mystical.
Well, Alan
even
Pryor,
if there is some sort of a hallucinogenic that is behind it, it still is in the area of the magic. What did Alan Pryor have to say?
Alan Pryor is also Horizon, and there we have the guy going on about, oh, no, she's a mystic. I've seen these. The primitives believe in the mystics, but there's a little doubt as to whether or not such a thing really exists. I mean, we have Callie, and she has the ability to project her mind. That is a mystical thing to us. It's not a real mental ability. It's not something that there's any scientific evidence for.
But we accept it as scientific.
Yes. And so I'm thinking that's what we're supposed to do with it.
Okay. So, I'll give you that.
Okay. So let's talk a little bit how Servalon ended up here is a bit of a mystery to me. After our last episode, which was Gambit, and Servalon was chasing Travis, and Travis was trying to escape from her, and he got the information where the guy went with the brain print that would contain the location of Star One. Now it seems like they're in cahoots again.
It would seem.
Except, clearly, Travis is playing to win now.
Yeah, I mean, after all that hubbub about, you know, we could rule the universe together, I mean...
And when Servalon turns him down, you know, there's that sudden sort of, okay, well, I should go warn the fleet then. Kind of, there is that sort of, okay, I think I've tried to make you listen.
I tried to cut you in on this, but you didn't want any part of it, so hasta la vista, baby.
That's right. So is that a little bit of Travis has a thing for Servalon?
We've seen that kind of suggestion before. That there's something there. I don't know. I kind of get the feeling that he was playing Servalon for a greater purpose. He was scheming something.
Well, he's definitely scheming.
Yeah, but it was not because he had a thing for Servalon. I think he was trying to play her, which is a dangerous thing to do because, let's be honest, she is one cagey lady.
Yeah. Well, and he was making perfect sense. I hate to say this, but I mean, he was making perfect sense. Think about it. You know, we could, with that computer center, we could rule the galaxy. And she's like, presumptive, and said, but you know, the power and you could do the stuff. And finally, she just goes, what are you talking about, Travis? And I thought, what a strange line, because
I mean, it's pretty clear what he's talking about. I mean, it's very, very clear. He's saying, you know, with Star One, you can really run the Federation the way you want to.
And yet, because she says that, it makes you think
she's not.
There's something that Travis is not saying. You know, there's something more here to Travis's. We could do this. We could rule it. There is something just a little bit more. And that's what she's asking. What are you talking about? And then he just kind of cages up and goes, yeah, okay, well, I better go take the ship out and warn the fleet. And it's not really there in the dialogue, but it's sort of there in the way she asked the question. So, you know, it seems like maybe Travis has got yet another cunning plan, perhaps to catch Blake. I don't know.
Maybe, because he knows that Blake's obviously after that location. He's after Star One. So, you know, it's, again, man, some of these motives get very, well, not very, but they get a little murky from time to time.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes it's a little hard to determine what it is that someone is really planning to do.
So now here's I guess this is where we're going to go with the remainder of the discussion, unless you have anything to throw in here for our very short Blake 7 podcast. This is, I think, the first time that Avon has called Blake on his Star One, you know, okay, so you've been after Star One for a long time. What are you going to do when you get Star One? I'm going to destroy it. And Avon's now saying, wait, All you care about is destroying the Federation, but think about this for a second. Star One is a powerful tool, and Blake can't see it. He cannot see this. All he's interested in is destroying the Federation at all costs. He is a man obsessed, and he cannot see. Because let's face it, Star One is an enormously tempting, if you had any larcenous inklings whatsoever, it would be hard that you could not be thinking, well, if I were running the place, I would be running the place. And I think it's interesting that Servalon is the person who doesn't actually want to know where Star One is. I mean, she needs to know where Star One is. She needs to find it before Blake finds it. Right?
Well,
she needs to prevent Blake. But no, there's a reason why nobody knows where this is. And she's turning down Travis. Is like, we could control this. Like, no. Like, no, 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 no. She could have more power than she already does, but she doesn't want it because I think she realizes that this is a problematic thing to have.
Right.
And Blake has not considered this at all. Aven is now beginning to question what should be done.
Yeah. But I kind of get the feeling that, and maybe I totally misread it, but I was sort of getting the feeling that the only reason Blake didn't want it, I mean, aside from completely bringing the Federation, to its knees, if you will, I got the impression that he didn't want that kind of power either because of the old saying, absolute power corrupts absolutely. And he would be replacing one tyrannical organization with a potentially second one, namely himself.
Wow, you're putting an awful lot of goodness and kindness on Blake there, who just seems obsessed to me.
Well, that's true, he does, but there was just something that I got in this one that seemed to suggest that he didn't want the power.
Okay.
Even after Avon even suggests it, Blake is like, no.
Well, there's one other thing here that I think we've been given enough information in the story that we can extrapolate on what we've been given without being exactly spoilery, because that's not. Travis says it himself. Star One controls, I forgot all the things he listed. One of the things was it controls the weather on 200 planets. It controls everything. Everything the Federation does, it controls. But weather control?
What happens if
you destroy weather control? Is that striking the Federation, or is that harming civilians?
I think it would depend on the planet and why.
If you think they're controlling the weather to be evil to these people, I suppose that's
true.
Well,
I wouldn't necessarily say to be evil, but maybe there is some kind of facility. Say, for example, they've got some kind of big high-tech facility, whatever it is, a construction plant, another intelligence base, who knows. They have something on some planet because of its strategic value, but the weather situation makes it inhospitable at best, or possibly even impossible to set up a base there and have it be run if the weather is that hostile. So you set up weather control in order to make the operations go as smoothly as possible for the Federation's needs. Get rid of the controlled weather situation, and then you have essentially weather chaos, which could undermine, if not destroy, whatever it is that the Federation is doing on said planet.
Or they could be weather controlling it to make better growing conditions on planets so that they can make more food for the people, or things that you – more prosaic things that would be the first line of defense in weather control. Well, let's stop some of those hurricanes. Let's make the rainfall consistent.
Assuming the Federation is nice.
Okay, but we have to assume from what we've seen that there's hundreds of planets in the Federation, and they're populated mostly by people. And whereas they may be sort of enslaved to more or less degrees, depending on whether they're on Earth or whether they're on the colonies, but they're still people going about their lives. There's still, if you go back to Nazi Germany, not everyone was in a Nazi uniform, and not everyone was marching Jews to the slaughterhouse. There were people who were running stores, and they were growing crops, and they may have been working the war machine, but they were relatively ordinary people. They're still the bulk of the people are probably just sort of, well, I was born into this situation, and I'm trying to make the best of my life that I can. And yes, the government is corrupt, but the government cannot possibly be the majority of the people in the Federation. It just can't be. It's just we see most of that because that's what Blake is after. But there's got to be civilians out there. And the computer control that runs everything, imagine what your life would be like if your computers all went out and the internet was gone.
Bye-bye, computer overlord.
Yep, yep. But also bye-bye, you know, food distribution and information.
Oh, well, dadgummit, there goes my Netflix. Well, crap.
Yeah, that's another one. But it's so tied in, and we're talking about in the far-flung future where computers are far more sophisticated, and yet, strangely, at the same time, not even remotely as sophisticated as our current computers or phones, for that matter. But you know what I'm saying? I mean, Blake's not looking at this picture.
No, he's not. And he might be. And again, we have established that Blake is very obsessed. He is completely bound and determined to bring the Federation to an end. And this is the way to do it.
Mm-hmm.
Does it run the risk of creating collateral damage? Yes, but he's probably seeing this as the ends justify the means.
Isn't that what happens to all revolutionaries who start off idealistic? And in the end, it's
The
ends justify the means, and they...
It's hard to maintain your ideal in that situation.
And be a fighter. Yep.
Yeah. It becomes very difficult.
So,
I think we've seen that with Blake.
I mean, we haven't seen anybody put that pitch to him. It's like, this is not moral for you to go do this. We have, you know, like, well, there's more constructive things we could do if we controlled the computers. We could run it ourselves. It's like, now I'm not saying that's honest or wouldn't lead to corruption or destruction either. But I mean, there is at least one other path than just blowing it up.
Yeah, I would dare say that if you ran it, you could probably undermine key aspects to the Federation without harming any of the more innocent population.
That's right, especially since nobody knows where it is.
Yeah.
So you could just plunk Orak down there. And you could literally be controlling everything. You could starve Federation bases. You could prevent ships from getting there to supplying them. You could prevent them from moving troops. You could do anything if you controlled it. But if you destroy it,
it's chaos.
It's chaos. It's chaos.
I mean, you're essentially putting the Federation, all the Federation, you're relegating it to a third world country.
Mm-hmm.
So yes, it is a very drastic move on Blake's part, no question. But again, it is that obsession. He is just so fixed singularly with that goal of ending it at all costs. And it becomes pretty clear when you look at the series from this vantage point. Blake has not given any consideration as to, well, what next?
Yeah. This has been an interesting story because we're following, you know, there's the hero's story that we get, you know, in literature, the hero's journey.
Mm-hmm.
Blake is following it in a more realistic pattern. I mean, the hero's journey is a fictionalized account of, you know, one man triumphing over all odds and succeeding and becoming a better person.
But it's always meant to be a parable, too.
Right. In real life, people tend to become more and more obsessed. And, I mean, look at any revolution that's ever happened. For the most part, the people they have to be kind of radicalized to get them to even come up to have a revolution, and then it's really the revolution becomes a thing, not the purpose of getting it done. And so you don't actually become a hero. You actually become a villain by the end of it in most instances. And it's only in the hindsight of history being rewritten that frequently some of these people are like, yeah, you know, he was okay. So, yeah, I applaud Blake Seven for this. They have taken Blake away from being the hero as we go through this story. And that's a fascinating thing that you don't see too very often in TV, or certainly you didn't back in those days. I think it's no surprise that since the next episode is called Star One, I think Blake's going to find Star One.
I think that's a really good guess.
And I think Travis is going to find that location. And,
it's a foregone conclusion that Wacky Travis will be there himself.
So I think for the Series 2 finale, we can expect some fireworks. And speaking of fireworks, if you want to be a supporter of this podcast, you can become a patron of Fusion Patrol. Just visit patreon.com/FusionPatrol. That's patreon.com/FusionPatrol and find out more. So, yeah, that had nothing to do with fireworks whatsoever, did it? Anyway, we are going to cut this one short because that's just
there's really not much else to talk about.
So, thank you for joining me, Ben.
Oh, it's a pleasure.
And listeners, I hope you will join us all again next time on Fusion Patrol.
Cheers.
Fusion Patrol is a Lone Locust production. Like us? Leave us a review on iTunes or stop by and visit us at our website, fusionpatrol.com. Find us on Facebook at facebook.com/fusionpatrol. Our Twitter username is @FusionPatrol, or you can just send us a comment at feedback@fusionpatrol.com. Come check out our new YouTube channel at youtube.com/FusionPatrol. Please, come join the conversation. Our music is Fight the Future by Amber Wolf.